I'm Rick Gamley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A recent article titled, "Is Facebook Making Us Lonely?" set off a firestorm of debate. It was written by novelist and culture writer Stephen Marsh for the May issue of The Atlantic magazine. In it, Marsh answers his own question with a resounding yes. Although you can't blame just Facebook for making us lonely, he says, the social networking site does accelerate an ongoing American trend toward isolation by giving us the illusion of intimacy while we shut ourselves off from real interactions. Marsh's article sparked a lively discussion, including among a rising number of academics studying the impact of social media on our lives. And while some cheered Marsh's take, others took issue with the premise that Americans are more lonely in the first place, and even if they are, that it's Facebook's fault. In fact, some researchers see great social benefits from Facebook. For example, a recent Pew Center study found those who make lots of friends on Facebook feel more emotionally supported from friends online and offline. Today in The Exchange, we ask Stephen Marsh's question, is Facebook making us lonely? What do you think? Do all those Facebook friends make us feel more loved and more in touch with others? Or are those connections shallow and ultimately less satisfying? And if you agree that Americans are more lonely, is Facebook part of the problem, or could it be part of the solution? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, or email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And of course, you can post your comments on our Facebook page, too. Our guests are Eric Kleinenberg, professor of sociology at New York University, the author of several books, including Going Solo, The Extraordinary Rise and Surprising Appeal of Living Alone. And Eric Kleinenberg, it's great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Also with us from Toronto is Stephen Marsh, author of that Atlantic article I talked about, Is Facebook Making Us Lonely? Stephen currently writes a monthly column for Esquire. His articles have also appeared in the New York Times and other publications. And Stephen, good to have you too. I know you've been busy lately fielding questions from people about this article.
Yes, fielding questions, and my wife had a baby a week ago, so I've been very busy.
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, we really appreciate you being with us, and congratulations. And Stephen, why do you think this article got people so worked up?
Well, I think the question of what technology is doing to us, and also the intensity of and the speed of technological change and how it's affecting society is obviously a huge question, and people have very strong feelings about it.
So go ahead. So what were the strong feelings that you heard from people after you wrote this? I know you got lots of comments.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, probably too many to actually categorize. I mean, certainly there were criticisms about a number of different studies that I referenced in the article, but I mean, hundreds and hundreds of likes, hundreds and hundreds, ironically, you know, thousands and thousands of Facebook likes is one way of gauging it. But also, you know, some people said to me, you know, the obviousness of this is just when you walk down the street, you see it. People looking into their mobile phones, you know, that did not exist 5 years ago, and public space has changed. You know, the thing is, Facebook is such a huge phenomenon that it affects, you know, the new numbers are about 900 million Facebook users. People have very profound feelings about it, and it also has a huge amount of, everyone is involved with it. So, you know, the range of responses that I got was just too large to even categorize, which is, I probably have never had for anything before.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like for anything that I've written before that has had just so many different idiosyncratic responses.
Well, give us just the summary, and we'll get into detail later, of course. But why do you think, Stephen, that Facebook is making us lonelier?
Now, you see, I would say that that actually misrepresents what I wrote. I mean, because loneliness, like Facebook, it's pretty clear Facebook doesn't actually make us lonely. It's how we use Facebook. So there are ways to use Facebook that definitely make you more lonely, and there are also ways to use it that make you less lonely. And the research is pretty. The two researchers that I really concentrate on, Cacioppo and Burke, are both pretty clear on that point. Like that, and that the way that you use Facebook, the social skills that you bring to Facebook, ultimately affect whether it makes you more lonely or not. Now that's one part of it. The other part is that Facebook does make people more narcissistic. there was research that came out after I'd finished my article that shows it even more clearly than the stuff I have in the piece. And the effect of narcissism on our society and how that affects loneliness is a sort of more profound question, and one that's kind of unanswerable, but I think sort of gestures towards a lonelier future, that narcissism and loneliness are connected. There is some research to show that. So to say that Facebook makes us lonely would actually be a gross oversimplification.
Well, and Eric, I want to bring you into this too, but Stephen, you piqued my interest there, though. I mean, the link between narcissism and loneliness?
Yeah, I mean, there was a study that came out of Sweden that showed that, housewives who had greater levels of narcissism in youth had greater levels of loneliness in old age. That's one connection. But there's also, I think, just a sort of, a connection on the face of it, I guess, that narcissism is ultimately a form of cutting yourself off from other people. I think I call it a fighting retreat from others in the piece, and that this is ultimately will have a lonely consequence in the future. But, Facebook is very new. And it's not like, everything was great before 2004 and suddenly there's been this terrible force in our lives. We're still dealing with what social media will do. The first hints of it are what the first hits and the consequences are what this piece is really dealing with.
Yeah, well, and Eric Kleinenberg, I want to bring you into this. Just first of all, before we even get into whether Facebook makes us more lonely or not, or depending on how we use it, you take issue with the whole premise that we are indeed lonelier than ever. How come you think we're not?
Well, just because there's no evidence for it. There has been a robust series of research projects on loneliness and isolation in American life for decades now. And you can find, blips in which you see a spike of loneliness in certain age groups at certain times. But the overwhelming majority of the really serious high-level social science research from psychology, from sociology, from related fields shows us that there really has not been a spike since the introduction of the Internet. And so Stephen says many things in this article and just said many things I agree with, but I think we'd be wise to start by avoiding the trap of thinking that now we're lonelier than ever, we're more atomized than ever. We often feel this way because we're in this moment, but it's just not true.
Well, and many of our listeners here in New Hampshire are familiar with the work of Robert Putnam of Harvard University. He lives part-time in southwestern New Hampshire. His famous book, Bowling Alone, a bunch of years ago, said, Eric, I think that we are more alone and perhaps lonely than ever.
Well, what Putnam wrote is that we were not participating in certain kinds of civic organizations, like the Elks Club and the Rotary Club,
sure,
and things like that. And he had this great metaphor of an individual bowling alone. But the funny thing there is it turns out that Putnam didn't even have any evidence that Americans were literally bowling alone. They just weren't bowling in leagues. They were bowling with their friends. I've been influenced by that book. And I have to say, when I started my book, which is called Going Solo, and about the extraordinary spike in living alone in the United States, that the working title was going to be Alone in America. And it was meant to be, at the start, a book about how disconnected we'd become, because it's not just Putnam. Decades before that, it was The Lonely Crowd and The Fall of Public Man and The Pursuit of Loneliness and Man Alone. And 50 years before that, there was a scare among American sociologists that at the turn of the century, farmers were getting very lonely. So we've always had this concern in American culture. I thought I'd contribute to it. But when I really look closely at the research and talked to people, scanned all the evidence, I concluded that that just isn't the right way to spin this. That, in fact, part of the reason so many people can't live alone today is because we're more interdependent in a number of ways, and social media play into that.
Wow. So just taking on this whole premise that we're lonely in the first place, we fret about it, but we really aren't any more or less lonely than we ever were.
What I wrote about in the piece is that Americans, we worry about it more than anybody else, which I think is right. But let me just be clear about something, too. We have a big country. There are 300-some million people in the United States. So tens of millions of people can feel lonely at any given time. And we need to think about that as a serious health issue. I wouldn't dispute that for a moment. And I think we need to get clear on, what's the difference between chronic loneliness or depression and the kind of fleeting loneliness that sends us a physical and emotional cue that we need to get out into the world and be connected. So sometimes loneliness can be a healthy thing when we can respond to it appropriately. So I think there's so many interesting things to discuss about Facebook, and I hope we can do it. But let's not debate whether or not we're lonelier than ever, that we just aren't.
Well, and we're talking about Facebook this hour, and specifically its impact on our social contacts, on our sense of loneliness. Again, we've got Stephen Marsh with us. He wrote the Atlantic article recently, Is Facebook Making Us Lonely? And Eric Kleinenberg is here, too, professor of sociology at New York University. You can join us with your phone calls at 1-800-892-6477. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org. And, of course, post your comments on our Facebook page. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And, Stephen, I do want to spend most of the hour talking about Facebook, since you raised it in this article. But what do you think about this idea that we are more lonely, we aren't?
Well, you know, I mean, the thing that's so excellent about Eric's book, and which is why all your listeners should read it, is that he draws this very important distinction between loneliness and being alone. Now, that's key to understand, because loneliness is a very slippery psychological category where, you know, for example, being married doesn't necessarily mean that you're less alone. If you're in a marriage with a woman who's not a, or a spouse, I should say, who isn't a confidant, you become more lonely. Things that you might assume would make people more or less lonely, like believing in God, for instance, makes no difference to whether you're lonely or not. But you know, I guess what I take from where I disagree with Eric is that the epidemic of loneliness, you know, which is a term that, you know, I did not invent, that I actually took from a 2001 essay that won a prize for physicians in physicians writing on popular subjects in 2011, is something that, you know, there are dozens of articles from the nursing profession, from the medical profession, from the psychiatric profession, from social workers about how we deal with this tide of loneliness. Now, the question of whether it's accelerating or not, it is very difficult to say. I mean, the research that I have in the book ends in 2004, and the stuff that I have after is not, you know, it is not absolutely certain. I'm dealing with what the impression that I'm getting from frontline people who are working in these fields.
Okay, we will stop it right there, but we'll pick it up after a short break and take your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more on Facing Off over Facebook on the Exchange on NHPR at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the legal and ethical debate over U.S. drone attacks. New Hampshire weather for today, partly to mostly sunny. There is a slight chance of a brief shower over the White Mountains, highs today 75 to 80 degrees. Partly cloudy, cool tonight, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow starting out partly sunny in the morning, clouding up in the afternoon. Highs tomorrow from 73 to 78 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Chippers, whose business is all about your life outside, providing care for your trees, turf, garden, land, and forest. Service areas at chippersinc.com. And from Centurion Insurance Group of Hanover, New Hampshire, offering personal, commercial, and wholesale brokerage insurance services to clients nationwide at centurionusa.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, whether Facebook is making us more lonely. That's the premise of one article that generated lots of attention and discussion. Let's get your thoughts. The Exchange is on Facebook. You can go to our page, join the conversation there. You can call us, too, at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. With us from Toronto is Stephen Marsh. He's the author of that article I mentioned, Is Facebook Making Us Lonely? He also writes a monthly column for Esquire, and his articles appeared in other publications. With us from New York is Eric Kleinenberg, professor of sociology at New York University. And again, we'd like to hear from you on Facebook, through email, or by phone, 1-800-892-6477. And just real quickly, gentlemen, before we go to our listeners, Stephen, I had to cut you off there. We were going to the break. You were finishing up your thought on what you called a tide or an epidemic of loneliness.
Well, I'll just say, you know, the research that I looked at from 2008, John Cacioppo's book, Loneliness, which is sort of this huge study, says that the number of Americans who are miserable because of loneliness, or that's one of the major reasons why they're unhappy, is 60 million. So that's a
lot of people.
That's a huge number. And I think Eric is right to say that the what we define as loneliness and the details of its acceleration are perhaps negotiable. On the other hand, the fact that there is a huge number of incredibly lonely people in America isn't really. And charting the effect of Facebook on that number is sort of what I wanted to do in the piece.
And again, we are looking at the impact this hour of Facebook on whether we are lonely or not. And we'd love your thoughts. You can call us 1-800-892-6477. And gentleman Clay is waiting in New Boston. Hi, Clay. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? I just want to make a comment. I'm a member of Facebook, but I don't find the need to, be that involved with it. It just seems like a lot of people are on there, daily, constantly communicating with everybody about everything that goes on in their lives. And, I think that life has got a lot more, you've got a lot more going on in your life doing your day-to-day routines. And, there's a difference between loneliness and loneliness. I'm involved with my family, my immediate family, and my, my day-to-day chores, and I can't sit down and communicate with everybody every day. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Well, Clay, I wonder how you would answer the question that Stephen Marsh asks in his article then. Is Facebook making us lonely? What do you think, Clay?
There's a difference between being lonely and just being alone. Struck a chord with me when I heard that comment about loneliness. A lot of people are reaching out, and I have a lot of friends that, they're communicating probably more so with Facebook than in the past, where it was phone calls and occasional communication. So,
well, thanks a lot for calling in, Clay. And Eric, I think he was quoting you when you said there's a big difference between alone and lonely.
So Laura, I'm a social scientist, and one of the things that we specialize in doing is making distinctions between causality and correlation, and really try to sharpen our thinking on these kinds of questions, which consume us all because they're about things that are changing in the world we live in. And I think it's important to note here that this really shouldn't be a matter of opinion, and it's a matter for which there's some really good research. And we need to locate, when this loneliness spike happens, if there really has been a loneliness spike or epidemic. And if there has been one with the introduction of Facebook or social media, then we'd have a really strong case to make that social media played an important role in generating the spike. But for me, it's important to note that since the rates of loneliness have actually been really steady, and you could find those same doctors and nurses 50 years ago or 100 years ago worrying about lonely people, this is something that tells us whatever it is that we're suffering from, social media might not be the cause of it. And this is where I think Stephen's point that he made on our call today is really important, that for some people, Facebook and other social media contribute to their loneliness because they're lonely people and they can't quite figure out how to make the kinds of meaningful connections they need. But for others, it has very little impact, and for others, it enhances their social lives. For me, what's been influential is a big study by Pew showing that the heaviest users of social media are actually more likely than the rest of us to spend face time with friends and with strangers in public places. And that's really not the way the story is commonly told. So research can help us to think clearly here.
Yeah, I saw that Pew study came out in February of this year. I have another question I want to throw to both of you. Sure, Stephen, go ahead. Sorry.
It's just that, both Moira Burke and John Cacioppo have seen those studies, like the studies that show that Facebook users have more face time away from Facebook, like those have been very, very consistent. What I was trying to show in this new research, which is longitudinal, is that it's exactly that distinction between correlation and causation. I mean, because Facebook users tend to be people in high school, university students, people who have very, very active social lives. So it's when the advantage of this new research is that it shows what Facebook does over time to people in their social connections. And that's a much more complicated question, if you see what I'm saying.
Longitudinal, causation, correlation, we're getting social science-y here.
Of course, people who tend to be on Facebook tend to be more socially active, but that doesn't that doesn't mean that they're more socially active because of Facebook. That, I think, is actually the key point, one of the key points in this article, because I think we have this idea in our head that this explosion of communication, technologically enabled, accessible communication, is going to lead to a more connected world and that will have social benefits. And that is not true. That is very important to understand. Those ads that you see through the airport, we're living in a much more connected world, we all see each other more, it's very important to understand that fantasy, that utopianist fantasy of a technologically communicated world where we're all one because of the internet or because of Facebook, not true.
Okay, that's a really important point. Eric, go ahead and then we'll go back to our listeners.
Oh, well, I agree with that, actually. I don't think Facebook will solve all of our problems. Technologies don't solve all of our problems, and we're right to be skeptical about those kinds of ideas. But I also think there's another thing that we should be clear about, which is that there's this idea that somehow Facebook and social media will substitute for face-to-face relationships, for deep and meaningful ties. And what all the research that's really good shows us is that what they do is they supplement those things, that we find some way to fit social media into our lives, and we don't destroy our souls. We don't become deeply lonely because we use them. Lonely people will stay just about as lonely after using Facebook. People who aren't lonely will be not so lonely after using Facebook. But we use them to supplement.
So it doesn't change anything, Eric.
Well, it changes the experience of being connected in many ways, and it can keep us in touch with people we wouldn't otherwise be in touch with, and it can suck up a huge amount of time, which we might put into other things. I happen to be from the school that thinks that, you know, what we've really substituted now is Facebook for passive viewing of television, and that we spend a lot of time on our computers and our machines and less time doing things like television, but it would be totally unhealthy for people to, spend all of their time in front of their computers doing social media. And I'm with Stephen. I mean, what an annoyance it is to have people bumping into each other on the streets of Manhattan or Toronto because they're so busy with their devices that they forget about the people around them. And let me tell you, as someone who takes taxi cabs in Manhattan quite often, there's nothing worse than having your taxi driver texting and using Facebook while he's driving around the city. So there are real dangers here. And I'm a father. I don't want my kids sucking all their lives into these machines. And I think we could have really productive conversations about these things. We just don't need to whip up a kind of scary frenzy of concern that we're lonelier and more atomized than ever. We do this all the time. It makes for nice media headlines. It generates debates. But I think ultimately it proves to be kind of a distraction from the deeper and more interesting issues.
Well, and I've got a couple questions on that for you, but I want to share you both with our listeners as well. So join us at 1-800-892-6477. As we look at this question of whether Facebook is making us more lonely or not, the number 1-800-892-6477. The Exchange is on Facebook, of course, so we hope you go to our page, join the conversation there. And let's go next to Greg in Hancock. Hi, Greg. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I don't think that Facebook necessarily makes us lonely. I think those people that we're identifying are just naturally being identified by the program itself. There's always going to be lonely people. There's lonely people in the world. And I don't think that it makes us lonely. It just puts a face to those people and makes them known that that they might be lonely. I don't think it actually...
Yeah, and Greg, here's a question for you, and I know your phone's going out, but I did want to ask you, does Facebook have the potential, Greg, to make us less lonely?
Less lonely? I don't think so either. I don't think it does either. I think it's just another means for people to connect digitally, but I don't think it makes the person more of a shut-in, doesn't want to go outside and meet people. I don't think it has that effect.
Okay. No. Greg, thanks for calling, kind of picking up on what Eric said a minute ago. But here's a question out of that for you then, Stephen. I have heard some people say that Facebook does have the ability to make some people less lonely. You know, they live in a geographically isolated place or in a community where they feel completely, apart from everybody else in terms of values. The example of a gay teenager in a conservative Bible Belt community is often given. At least that teen can make some connections on Facebook and not feel just completely, alone.
Oh, I mean, you know, I did a call-in show in Utah where, you know, there were these people who called in who'd organized people escaping, you know, abusive situations in Mormonism and so on. I mean, like, you know, what I would really hope is that no one would think I'm being a Luddite here or not thinking that Facebook is wonderful. I mean, I just had a friend who got cancer and we were raising money for him and we used Facebook and it made a fortune. Right.
Wow.
I mean, look at Kickstarter. I mean, these technologies are wonderful if used properly. You know, it's sort of like I sort of feel when I hear these questions, like it's sort of like saying I hate the car, and then people saying, well, an ambulance drove me to the hospital and saved my life. Like, it is of course true that there are these huge benefits to this technology. It's just what are some of the larger consequences? I can say that, you know, there's an interesting article in the Times about digital literacy recently, about how they're actually sending teachers into schools to teach lower-income, underprivileged children how to use Facebook and social media and technology more effectively because there's what they call a digital divide between lower-income, underprivileged people using technology to time waste and, you know, privileged people using it to improve their lives and educate themselves. This is what we have to start thinking about. Yes? We have to stop thinking of technology as this grand force that's going to change our lives for the better or worse beyond our control. We have to start thinking of it. We have to take responsibility for it. The way that we use it is going to shape its effects. And, I mean, that's why Burke's research was so fascinating to me, because the way that you use Facebook affects these, you know, affects depression, affects all these psychological states. And there are, you know, there are techniques that you can use to improve your Facebook usage, to make it more social.
Can I say this is...
Yeah,
this,
go ahead, Eric.
It's such an important point that Stephen's making. And see, I knew that with some reasonable discussion we could come around on this one. So, for instance, you know, another study about Facebook that the New York Times reported on about 2 weeks ago bears on this issue of does Facebook make us more narcissistic? And the finding that the Times reported is actually that no, in general, it does not make us more narcissistic. The overwhelming majority of people who use Facebook do not become narcissists when they use it. But the people who compile unrealistic numbers of friends, you know, they just try to friend everyone, thousands of people, and then find themselves getting sucked into the chatter of the drama of other people's lives, will become more narcissistic because they'll start trying to do that thing as well. Me-centered, boasting style posts. And that is quite destructive. And so what would be productive here is to think about this thing we're involved in as a social experiment. And this is a kind of language that I use in going solo quite a lot, too. When we have these big social changes, rather than race to say, this is a social problem, it's making us lonely or more unhappy or more narcissistic, what if we step out of them a little bit and say, we're at the beginning of this extraordinary social experiment. In this case, how are we going to live with our machines? How are we going to live with social media? How will we integrate them into our everyday lives? And let's do our best to figure out how we can use them well to enhance our lives. Older people who are, you know, homebound, who can use social media to be connected with friends and family, or gay teenagers in Utah who, you know, who do something similar. And how do we use them to our detriment? And how can we figure out how to avoid those things?
Well,
that's where this debate needs to go.
Let's take another call. And this is Kathleen in Meredith. Hi, Kathleen. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I just called to say that I had cancer last year, and I was on Facebook a lot while I was sick because it was a way to connect with my friends that, you know, when I didn't have the energy to have them visit me, I could just kind of hang out on Facebook when I wanted to or when I, you know, had the energy to do it.
Right. So maybe you're feeling too sick and too tired and too awful to call someone on the phone or see someone, but at least you can keep up with people on Facebook, Kathleen.
Yeah, I think Facebook was a huge social saver for me. And I had a very good and large community that supported me and helped me, but I think the Facebook connection really was the word I want to use, like augmented that, or that's the right word?
Right, and you need that boost when you're sick, Kathleen. Are you doing better
right
now?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was at Dartmouth yesterday, and I'm all good.
All right. Good to hear. Kathleen, thank you for calling. I think, Stephen, you mentioned a similar instance. What about this idea where sometimes you want to get out there, but you just can't because you're so sick or you're having other issues? Maybe you have a sick child at home and you can't get out. Here, it seems like Facebook makes you less lonely.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, I have a new baby. I'm not leaving the house for a million years. But so, I mean, all this
it gets
stuff
better,
is very,
Stephen, I promise you.
I mean, you know, I would say loneliness probably isn't my problem at the moment. I have others. But the, yeah, I mean, obviously it has huge benefits. I mean, it has huge potential benefits. I just think we also have to acknowledge that there are possible confusions. I mean, you know, the gay teenager who is living in a small town who gets a connection to a world that he cannot access in the flesh, that's great for a while. Those connections can mean a lot, but until they turn into bonds, which Facebook is very poor at doing, I mean, that's the other thing the research shows, that like you tend not to transfer social networks out of Facebook into real life. It tends to be the other way around. Until there's a bond, you know, it just will be, you know, what John Cacioppo said to me was that it was like eating celery. You know, it feels like nutrition, but it's not.
Here's an email that I got from Richard. It just came in. He says, everyone embellishes what they are doing in their lives when listing it on Facebook. That makes us all feel we are underperforming in our own lives and sorry for themselves. I was talking to somebody else yesterday, one of our young interns, who kind of said the same thing. What do you think about that, Eric? That, you know, you look at Facebook and you go, wow, everybody's doing so well, and they're either getting married or they're finding new jobs, and, you know, I'm a loser.
Oh, I just don't think that everyone does use Facebook that way. I mean, look, we've already heard about people who use it to talk about their vulnerability when they're suffering from a serious illness. The best users of Facebook in my network, you know, use it to tell funny stories or to help me curate the web. That, you know, they link to interesting things that they've read or to music videos, make, you know, post photographs. I mean, let's be clear. What made Facebook take off and become such a popular thing is that people were sharing photographs of themselves and of their friends. And here again, you know, there's a good thing in that. It's nice to be able to stay with your friend. Like, Stephen just had a baby. I'd like to see Stephen's baby on Facebook, and that could be a cool thing. But it could be a problem if people post inappropriate photographs of themselves or friends and then regret it and they don't have control over their data. So another big issue here is about how Facebook and companies like it compromise our privacy and reduce our capacity to control our own image.
Eric, I'm sorry, I got to cut you off there. I apologize. We're going into a short break and we'll be right back.
By now, you know you can donate your old car to NHPR. And you know how easy we make it by filling out the paperwork for you, picking up the car, and auctioning it off. But what you may not realize is that we accept more than just cars. You can donate anything to our vehicle donation program, from a snowmobile to an RV to a boat. Find out more at nhpr.org or give us a call and get the process started at 1-877-393-NHPR.
This is NHPR. Support comes from UR members and from the Flying Monkey Performance Center in Plymouth, presenting American folk poet Don McLean on Saturday, June 9th. Information and tickets at flyingmonkeynh.com. And from Dr. Cameron Iles of Sports Medicine Atlantic Orthopedics of Portsmouth, providing comprehensive treatment for foot and ankle issues, surgery, and reconstruction. SMAO.org. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, new economic jitters, from the federal debt to unease in Europe. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the debate over Facebook, specifically whether Facebook makes us feel more lonely or more loved. Join us with your thoughts on that. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. What do you think about this question? Is Facebook making us lonely? Would you say yes or no? If you agree that Americans are more lonely, is Facebook part of the problem? Could it be part of the solution? Tell us what you think. Again, the email is exchange@nhpr.org. Of course, you can go to our Facebook page or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, right back to our listeners. Jan's waiting in Ashland. Hi, Jan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Thanks Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Jen.
My question is, I can't really wrap my consciousness around Facebook. What does it offer that you can't do by email? I mean, you can send photographs, you can chat with your friends. I really don't get the phenomenon.
Okay. Jen, thanks for calling in. Boy, guys, we could talk about this for another half hour. But, Eric, what do you think?
I think we should get some teenagers to call in and answer that question.
Hopefully they're all at school.
The ones who really know how to use it. Look, it's different in the sense that it's for sharing with very large numbers of people or with whomever's in your social network. So rather than send an image of my children to 600 different email users whose inboxes are full with other kinds of things, I post it on Facebook, and if they want to see it, they can click on it. If they don't want to see it, they can click right past it, or the same with other kinds of things that I want to share. Facebook is really for sharing different kinds of things.
Different kinds of things like links and photos and other material if you want to know more. Go ahead, Stephen. I can hear you wanting to jump in there.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. But I would say the thing about Facebook, one of the reasons that it's so complicated trying to figure out its effects is that it has a huge different variety of functionalities. I mean, I was talking to your producer in the pre-interview on the phone yesterday, and she said, well, I just get news feeds. And that's a perfectly legitimate way to use Facebook. But there are, hundreds of others. Some people use it just as text messaging for posting images, which is, of course, as Eric rightly says, it's really dominant function. But I would say that the distinction about what it is as opposed to, previous iterations of the Internet is that it's an act of self-presentation. And that is actually a key part of its functionality and one of the keys to understanding what it does.
So it's less about, email might be about information. I'm doing this or meet me here. Facebook is about what you call Stephen? Self-presentation?
Self-presentation. I mean, I think I use some fancy phrase like curation of the self.
Let me just say I'd love to be the academic on this conversation using the non-technical terms.
Right. Yeah.
So to answer Jan's question then, both of you, it would be more Facebook is about, keeping in touch with large numbers of people, but being in touch when they feel like being in touch. It's not like you get an email and you have to respond or something like that. You don't have time to individually keep in touch with, 200 people. Is that basically how you would respond to that, Eric?
Yeah, and you don't have the same expectations.
Yeah.
When you send it out. So if I send you an email of my 1-week-old child,
right,
and you don't respond to me with a note about how cute that child is,
you're insulted.
That's a diss. But not on Facebook. If you don't want to respond, that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Jan, for the call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from Betsy in Enfield. She says, I think it all boils down to the personality of the individual. For example, I've always been on the top of extrovertedness. I need real people with whom to interact. I'm in my late 60s, have chosen not to do Facebook because I want to be involved with the real world. I'm a member of a Rotary Club, cherish the contact with real smiles and conversation, seeing facial expressions and the nuances of real world words. Betsy says, I am one who can be very lonely in the middle of New York City and thousands of people. Contacting people via Facebook who I can't see or touch is not for me. What do you think, Stephen Marsh, of that?
Well, Cacioppo, the guy who wrote Loneliness in 2008, who's this neuroscientist in Chicago, and I think is great. I mean, he's pretty extreme about how he regards face-to-face contact. It is essential human activity, and nothing can replace that. That's the key thing. Facebook can't replace face-to-face contact. Neither can email or the phone or anything else. Now, I mean, for Cacioppo, he even says that pets can't, God can't, nothing can. Just there is a huge amount of our brains are devoted to sociability. We are social animals. Our biology is primarily social. I mean, our brains are not designed for math. They're designed for gossip. They're designed for feeling what people are feeling, and so that's absolutely essential. The key question of Facebook: if it replaces face-to-face contact, it makes you lonely. There's no real doubt about that. But if you use it, I mean, I would say that, she probably should get on Facebook because people who are extroverted can use Facebook to get more face-to-face contact, and that's totally healthy.
Well, Betsy, I hope you're still listening. Yeah, go ahead.
So I would just hope that she would, use Facebook. I think sounds like a perfect candidate for it.
What about the idea, and I'll throw this to you, Eric, first. What about the idea that Facebook, one of you said, does suck up a lot of time? What about the idea, Eric, that, you know, I spend, and I'm not saying I do, but let's say I spend 2 hours a day over the course of the day looking at my Facebook page. I could have spent that 2 hours, you know, going down to the coffee shop and meeting real folks and getting that vital interaction that Stephen talks about.
So here again, we just have to look at
what
we
know. It's the replacement theory.
Yeah, but the thing is that that's not how people really use it. So there just is not evidence that the heavy users of Facebook are substituting the social media for the face-to-face interaction. So I want to agree with Stephen. I mean, I just don't think that there's credible, serious people arguing that Facebook should replace face-to-face interaction, that Facebook does replace face-to-face interaction. My view, and the view of many people who study media, is that what's changing is that rather than kind of passively taking in television and other kinds of media, we're now using things like Facebook and Twitter or filling in, you know, entries on Wikipedia to produce in new and interesting ways. And we should appreciate the kinds of interaction and creativity that's going into the Internet, in my view, a little bit more than we do. Let me put it this way. I mean, I think one way to respond to all these new stimuli is to have this lament, the kind of predictable lament about how bad things are and how estranged we've become. And that's what we do. And I could find you a lament from almost every decade of history that matches up with whatever the new technology is.
For example, the telephone.
Or the car. I mean, the ones that Stephen has referenced, because it is totally predictable as a kind of social scientist and historian that is the kind of conversation we have, and we need to have them. It's fine. But my view of this is actually we're more interesting than we think. My book is about this fact that our lives are more interesting than we think because we're learning to adapt to these new stimuli. So I would say almost everyone who's called in today has said something like, well, it doesn't make us lonely, but here's some things it does do and it doesn't do. And on this loneliness business, let me just say one other thing, which was a finding that so stunned me when I was working on Going Solo, and that so many people said, people who had been married, who had lived in families, who were now living alone and being quite active socially, said, Eric, there's no time when I've ever been more lonely than when I was living with the wrong person.
Mm. Well, what about this idea, Stephen, that, you know, this perhaps, I don't want to extrapolate something that you didn't say, Eric, but there's the idea that perhaps Facebook actually makes us less lonely because if you're sitting in front of a TV, you know, you're sort of just isolated, you're being lectured to or being entertained. At least on Facebook, you're communicating, you're sharing ideas with other human beings. What do you think?
Well, sometimes you are. I mean, the evidence says that the more time you spend on Facebook, the lonelier you that tends to be. The lonely people tend to spend more time on Facebook.
Really?
The activities of passive broadcasting and passive reception, so just like, you know, basically surfing for your old girlfriends and then putting up how great your last meal was, like that stuff, you know, that stuff doesn't make you less lonely. Now, there is evidence that increased Facebook usage does cut into television. And television, of course, Facebook is a very new phenomenon. And compared to a lot of cultural consumption, it's actually, I mean, it seems so massive, you know, like 900 million users and all this time they spend on it. But television, the average consumer of television watches 8 hours and 17 minutes a day, right? I mean, that is a behemoth, a cultural behemoth that, you know, nothing really can stand in the face of. So, you know, I would say that if you use Facebook rather than television, and if you use it properly, it can make you less lonely. But those are two big ifs, you know?
You know, gentlemen, here's a very thoughtful email that I just got from someone who wanted to be identified as anonymous in Vermont. And I really want to share this with both of you. He says, in my experience, I don't know if it's a man or a woman. In my experience, Facebook has merely exploited my social emptiness / awkwardness. I have resorted to blocking family members as it is too painful to see their cheery posts of vacations and holidays they have spent together without including my children and me. I also always make sure never to belie my own depression, illness, poverty, only posting good news and happy thoughts furthering my feelings that my true self is undesirable. Wow. I really want to thank this person for sending in that email. You know, we touched on this earlier, but not enough, gentlemen. What do you think, Eric?
Oh, I think if you feel depressed and lonely and isolated in your offline life, you will carry that into your online life as well. And Stephen does a really nice job quoting this guy, John Cacioppo, you know, from University of Chicago, in his article, and saying precisely this. And it is not a cure-all. It's not as if you go to Facebook, you will suddenly feel connected and better about your life. It is like a car. You can use it to take you to your destination, or you could use it to crash into a wall someplace. We are who we are.
Well, it relates to what I think you mentioned earlier, Stephen, sort of the false happiness of many people's Facebook pages.
Yeah, I mean, the self-presentation is really the kind of larger question, and also the one that I don't think we have the answer to. I mean, I sort of feel like Facebook, in some of its iterations anyway, I would even say in most of them, it's sort of like a permanent Christmas letter. You know, I mean, I would get these Christmas letters from my cousins where everything's great and everyone's got a job, and then a year later everyone's divorced and broke. It comes through But the letters all stay perfectly, this, like, chipper imitation of a proper family. I think the question is, you know, the major critics like Sherry Turkle and Jaron Lanier, who are, you know, very, very brilliant analysts, and also people who are definitely not Luddites. You know, Jaron Lanier was one of the founders of virtual reality. I mean, what they worry about in Facebook isn't really self-presentation itself, because, you know, we've always done that. Since the time of Louis XIV, we've been involved in these games of the self and presenting ourselves. But really in the relentlessness of it, you know, that you don't get a break from self-presentation. Turkle finds people texting at funerals and things like that. I mean, those are extreme cases. But I think there's also, like, when I left high school to go to university, I went from being a jock to being a classic scholar basically overnight, because I left all my old friends at home. Facebook really delays that. Facebook makes that much, much more difficult anyway.
A permanent, cheerful Christmas letter that never stops.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Eric?
In my experience, first of all, I thought that was really interesting what Stephen just said. And, you know, I don't know, I'd love to figure out if it really is true that Facebook makes it more difficult for us to change and move in new directions. You know, does it really have that effect on college students? You know, they become more personally conservative in some ways. I just don't know the answer to that, but it's a really interesting question.
It's all anecdotal. I mean, you know, the stuff that they reference. I mean, Turkle is pretty, she has a long series of interviews and is pretty pretty thorough. But you're right that there's no sort of like sociological study.
Yeah,
I think
it's interesting, and I think that this is the kind of thing that I would love to track over time as part of this social experiment. I mean, my personal use of Facebook, and I've talked to my friends a lot about it, is that the people who are always boasting about, you know, the great thing that's happened to them, you kind of tune them out after a while. If you don't, and you don't click on their links, and then Facebook, you know, kindly recognizes that you don't click on their links, and they kind of disappear from your stream. And I think, Stephen, I'm sure this is probably clear with you as well. Like, there are certain people who are good at using Facebook for the kinds of things that we want to read. And if you have a few hundred friends, and I think the average person has something like 150 or 200, something like that, you know, it starts to recognize what you do want to read. And so it's just like your offline network as well. You spend time with certain of your friends, and there are other friends who you know that you're friendly with them, but you don't want to do much with them.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank that person from Vermont for emailing, and good luck to them. Hey, Stephen, I have to ask you this question, because I had read that even though you've got questions about Facebook, you're not completely trashing it, but you've got some serious questions about how this is affecting our social behavior, that you love Twitter.
I love Twitter, yeah.
So what's the difference?
I mean, well, Twitter
isn't Twitter
is
worse?
Than Facebook, because Twitter, the thing, you know, is funny, just from what Eric said, because the thing about Twitter is that it's so easy to make that distinction between those two types. Like, the people, I think there was an article about it, like, me Twitter people and external, like, people who send you great articles. Like, you sign up for I'm on this guy who does Chinese news, and he just translates the most interesting news about China every morning and then sends you a link about it. I mean, that's incredible.
Okay, but isn't Twitter more narcissistic? I'm doing this right now.
Well, I've just cut all those people out. Like, you just get to a point where it's like, if you're talking about what you're eating now, I just can't do this anymore. You know, it's a little less personal than Facebook, you know? I mean, it's less of a self-presentation. You know, but I shouldn't say, I mean, I'm not defending myself. Like, you know, I'm definitely involved in both of these technologies and use them both. You know, as I said, it's not the technologies themselves, it's how you use them.
So I think we've now reached a point where we can definitively answer the question on the cover of the Atlantic Monthly, you know, is Facebook making us lonely? The answer is no.
Well,
and I think that the
that's
the
not that is not that I would not agree with. I mean, the answer is yes in certain cases, and no in certain. I mean, the beauty of writing a 6,000-word piece about it is that you can. It's not technology good, technology bad. It's, you know, you could say the same thing about the car. Like, is the car good or bad? Well, the car has amazing benefits, but it also has pollution, and also people die in accidents from it. There are social consequences to it.
I think what Cacioppo says and what you've said as well is that, you know, when it's used in the right way, and it often is, it connects us.
All right,
and
I'm going to cut it off there,
well,
Eric, and I apologize, guys. This has been great. Thank you both so much for being here. Stephen Marsh, thanks a lot for kicking this off with us.
It was a pleasure.
Stephen Marsh, author of the Atlantic article, Is Facebook Making Us Lonely? He joined us from Toronto. Eric Kleinenberg, thanks again for your time.
My pleasure.
Eric Kleinenberg, professor of sociology at New York University. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Claudia Camarino. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our page where you can learn more about upcoming shows. We're going to close with the Facebook song by Rhett & Link.
I'm hooked on Facebook. I used to meet girls hanging out at the mall, but now I just wait for them to write on my wall. Take a look, you're hooked on Facebook.
Hey, it says that Link's status has changed. He's playing the recorder.